Thank you for joining us on 1460 WVOX, America's great community radio station where many different voices are heard in the land. Opinions expressed on our community and open line programs are not necessarily those of the station, its management, or sponsors. As always, we're privileged to amplify the voice of the people here on Vox Populi 1460 and worldwide at WVOX.com for you and yours.
Call us crazy.
You're crazy.
But we believe radio should be delivered free of charge.
Are you crazy?
Go ahead, listen all you want. It's free. VOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lovensoul, your host for the series on the natural world, education and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, May 23rd, 2013, the 64th day of spring. We have gained 1 minute of daylight since yesterday, 27 since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun rose at 5:31 this morning. It will set at 8:14 this evening. We will have 14 hours and 43 minutes of daylight today. The moon rises at 6:42 this evening. It will set at 4:14 tomorrow morning. We're 2 days shy of full moon, which is Saturday on this Memorial Day weekend. Next high tides, we just turned high at 9:54 about an hour and a half ago. Next high tide in New Rochelle, 10:06, in Tarrytown, 9:22, Yonkers, 8:38, and Dobbs Ferry, 9:06 p.m. Now our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Well, two soldiers from Guam, from the Guam National Guard, and this is an American territory. Guam is belongs to us in a kind of a way, but it's hard to define all these special Commonwealth type of things, but Guam is America, really. So we honor them as well. These two were killed by a suicide bomber who targeted a coalition convoy with a car bomb in Kabul, Afghanistan, on May 16th. The two were Specialist Dwayne M. Flores, age 22, and Sergeant Eugene M. Aguan, age 23. Also, Sergeant Trenton L. Rhea, or Rhea, age 33, of Oakley, Kansas. He was with the 300th Military Police Brigade of the Army Reserve. He drowned while attempting to cross a canal during combat in Kandahar Province on May 15th. Then four servicemen from the 1st Armored Division were killed by a roadside bomb in Sinjar, Afghanistan, on May 14th. Those four are Specialist William J. Gilbert, age 24, of Hacienda Heights, California. Specialist K. Mitchell Daling, age 24, of Dalton, Massachusetts. Private First Class Cody J. Towes, age 21, of Elk Ridge, Utah. And the only one from a different unit killed in the same incident was Sergeant First Class Jeffrey C. Baker, age 29, from Hesperia, California. The only one from the different unit, he was with the 52nd Ordnance Group. These five mainland American servicemen and two soldiers from the American territory of Guam were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. Each death is a great loss to his or her family and to all of us. I look forward to the day when the conflict in Afghanistan comes to an end and there are no more deaths to report and hopefully no more wars to be started. Time for the Culture Quarter, my reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions and you have the right to disagree with them because everyone has the right to be wrong, and you do not have that right today because there is nothing to report. Okay, my guest today is Dr. Linda Cayo. Linda is science advisor and liaison with the Galapagos Conservancy. As you probably know, the Galapagos are islands off the coast of Ecuador and are best known for their giant tortoises. They're unlike any found anywhere else in the world, and the Galapagos is also known as the place where Charles Darwin made his most important discoveries and did his most important work. The islands are named for the tortoises, which were seen to resemble giant saddles originally, and curiously, the word has become a word for turtle in Spanish. Welcome, Linda Cayo.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Good morning. It's my great pleasure to have you here. You are in Paradise, California, are you not?
Quincy.
Quincy, yeah.
Quincy, California.
Is it near Paradise?
It's about an hour.
Oh, I had this line. How's the weather in Paradise this morning? So how's the weather in Quincy this morning?
It's sunny and cold.
Cold, really?
Well, it's still, we live in the Sierras, so the nights are cold. It'll be warm later in the day.
Okay, so that's Northern California?
Yes.
Okay.
And it is only 7:30 here, so.
That's true. That's true. That's true. Although this morning at 7:30, I was out jogging in shorts and a T-shirt, so it's different. But, you know, we tend to think of California as a warmer place than New York, but I guess the further north, and certainly in the mountains, it's going to be cold.
Yep.
Okay, so the Galapagos, as I said, are known for their tortoises, and especially for the most famous celebrity tortoise, Lonesome George. Now, you knew George personally before he died a few years ago. Tell us about George, how old he was, and then about tortoises in general.
I actually met Lonesome George first in 1981, so I'd known him a long time. I worked for the research station later for 10.5 years and supervised the Tortoise Center, so had very close contact with George. And I happened to be in the islands last June when George died, so I had almost a 30-year history with George, more than 30 years. He was the last known tortoise of the Pinta Island tortoise. And so with his death, that population went extinct. And George was an interesting animal. People thought tortoises were extinct on Pinta throughout the last century. And then in 1972, George was found and brought to the research station or the Tortoise Center on Santa Cruz in the hope that we would eventually find a female Pinta tortoise to mate with him. Unfortunately, that never happened in spite of searching through zoos and on Pinta itself. So George remained in captivity for the rest of his life. I think he was probably 100 years old, maybe, for tortoise, that sort of midlife.
Yeah, that's not real old for a tortoise.
No, that's not real old. They can live, we think they live 150 to 200 years. Nobody's been studying them that long, so we can't prove it, but it certainly seems that way. And George always had a bit of problems. He, unlike the other tortoises we had in captivity, he would get these odd weight gains, sometimes had goiters.
Really?
I think he perhaps was not the healthiest of tortoises.
Hmm.
His death was natural. And we all mourned him when he died, and we still are hoping to repopulate Pinta Island with tortoises that have some genetic relationship to George.
Well, you've just discovered some hybrid tortoises on another island, have you not?
Yes, there's a group that works out of Yale University that's been doing the genetics of giant tortoises for the past 15, almost 20 years, I would say. And they had found a single hybrid tortoise on Wolf Volcano at the northern end of Isabella Island that was half Pinta. So in 2008, they went back to Wolf and sampled over 1,600 tortoises and then ran the DNA analyses to see if they could find any more hybrids that had Pinta genes or ancestry. And we're always hoping to find a pure Pinta out there still. They found, I think, 17 more that had partial Pinta ancestry. And the biggest surprise of all was they found over 80, I think it's 89 tortoises that had partial Floriana ancestry. And this is even a greater find than the Pinta because the Floriana giant tortoise went extinct in the 1850s. So you might wonder why all these tortoises are up on Wolf Volcano, up on the north of Isabella Island.
I was just wondering that very thing.
Yeah. It turns out that when the whalers were there in the early 1800s, they collected tortoises. In fact, they were the primary cause of the decimation of tortoise populations in Galapagos. Tortoises can live for up to a year without food and water, so they provide the perfect fresh meat on a long sea voyage. So the whalers would go on shore, collect 50, 80, 100 tortoises, leave them up on their deck for a couple of days to sort of clean out their intestines, and then they would stack them down in the hold of the ship and bring them up as they needed fresh meat. And it was determined by a man named Townsend, who looked at the logs of the whaling ships, that they indeed took off somewhere between 100,000 and 200,000 tortoises from the Galapagos.
Wow.
Within about a 50-year period.
So they just stacked them on their backs, and that was the end of the life of the tortoise? They were able to survive that way?
Yep, they can survive. I mean, when you think of tortoises in general, turtles, their strategy is to wait. You know, if the conditions are bad, if you're in a drought, they just shut down and wait for better conditions.
Well, if you move that slow, you kind of got to wait for most things. They have
exactly.
to come right to you, right?
Exactly. So what happened was these whalers and some of the other seafarers at the time would sometimes anchor at Banks Bay, which is right beside Wolf Volcano. And if they were headed home and had too many tortoises on board, they would just drop them off on Wolf. So what we find on Wolf is this mixture of tortoises from many of the islands of Galapagos, and the hybridization or the interbreeding began about 200 years ago, which coincides perfectly with the time of the whalers.
Okay, interesting. We're going to have to take a break in about a minute, but you did say turtles in the air. Why don't you just tell those of us who don't know in the minute we have, and then, of course, we'll be back. The difference quickly between a tortoise and a turtle.
Okay, turtle is generally an umbrella term for all terrapins, turtles, tortoises. Tortoise is a term that absolutely is only for land turtles.
Okay, good. Let's complete that when we come back from the break. We're speaking with Dr. Linda Kayo from the Galapagos Conservancy. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you are listening in Darwin Island, Espanol, or Pinta, Galapagos, or Columbus, Ohio, New York, or any of the other 15 states with a city or town named Columbus, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You're listening live, and we will be right back.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lillian Wu. Reports of police raids in Britain after yesterday's bloody daylight attack, which top officials say may be terrorism related.
The suspects' identities haven't been revealed, but British officials say they were both on the radar of intelligence services here. They're suspected Muslim extremists, and they're both in the hospital after being shot by police.
Fox Radio's Simon Owen. The tornado disaster zone in Oklahoma stretching more than 17 miles. Cleanup and disaster crews facing obstacles.
We've seen a lot of lightning, some hail reported in areas according to the National Weather Service, and downpours, a flash flood warning.
Fox's Casey Stiegel. And losses on Wall Street despite some positive news on the jobs front and further signs that housing's recovering. First-time claims last week dropping to 340,000 and new home sales rising in April to the second highest level since the summer of 2008. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Of all the gifts we can give our children, perhaps the greatest of all is imagination. A sense of wonder. The joy of discovery. There's a place for this. A one-of-a-kind toy store called G. Willikers in downtown Katona, with the classic toys you loved as a kid, plus the very latest inventive playthings. At G. Willikers, you enter a child's wonderland, a gentle jungle of stuffed animals, exquisite dolls from France and Germany, organic and eco-friendly toys, and sturdy wooden trucks. You'll find a friendly and helpful staff with great suggestions for every child on your list. Locally owned and operated, G. Willikers, 29 Katona Avenue, directly across from the train station in Katona, for the gifts of imagination. 914-301-5274. G. Willikers in Katona, 914-301-5274.
Welcome to Free Radio. Free. No download fees, no subscription fees, and
it's accepted by the American Dental Association.
VOX.
WVOX.
A Okay, we are back. Welcome back. This is Bob Lovensall. The program is Environmentally Sound. We are at WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. My guest today is Dr. Linda Kayo of the Galapagos Conservancy. And we were just discussing as we went to the break the difference between turtles and tortoises. I realize it's a naive question, but turtles, as you say, are the generic, all the, actually terrapins are turtles. Is that a synonym?
Turtles, terrapins generally are considered swimming. Turtles is really the umbrella term.
Okay.
And tortoises live on the land. They don't go into rivers or the sea. They will sit in ponds, but they don't swim. Their feet are very elephant-like. They don't have feet that would allow them to swim.
Okay, so then when we see pictures on the nature channels of like Ridley's turtles, those guys got flippers, really. They can really propel themselves.
Yeah.
Move much quicker.
I wouldn't call them flippers, but they have feet that are good for swimming.
No, they kind of look like, yeah. Well, they kind of do look like.
Yeah,
they do. They almost look like pinnipeds in a way, like the seals.
Yeah.
In a way. Okay. So so what is a terrapin then?
Oh, terrapin. None of these terms are super, super specific. Terrapin, I usually hear when it's related to seagoing, river-going turtles. Some of these terms are interchangeable, I think, depending on what country you're in.
So it's kind of, like boat and ship. Everything's a boat, but the big ones are the ships, kind of something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, just like that.
Okay. So now when you were talking about hoping to find a pure pinta tortoise, what good is it to find just one? Because, again, if you have no one to mate it with, it's going to wind up extinct as a pure breed anyway.
Yeah, there's been a general refocus in the Galapagos now that we have saved many of the species that were in trouble, such as some of the land iguana species or tortoise species. And the focus on many of the islands now is on island restoration. And for island restoration, we really need to return giant tortoises to the islands where humans extirpated them. And giant tortoises play a critical role in the ecosystem. We often term them as ecosystem engineers or natural management tools. They're sort of tank-like large animals, and when they're walking through the vegetation, they plow it down. They'll knock over small trees. They graze. They will disperse seeds over kilometers. And so it's very important that we get tortoises back to these islands. And if we can find tortoises that have some of the genetic components of the original tortoises, we're better off. So what we're hoping is to go to Wolf Volcano and collect the hybrids and look for more. Some of the hybrids are relatively young, which suggests there could still be pure animals out there, and bring them into a breeding program and produce offspring that we would then release back onto Pinta, or in the case of Floriana, back to Floriana. And while they're not pure Pinta or Floriana tortoises, they're the closest that we can get, and they will provide those islands with their major herbivore into the future.
Okay, now we're talking about Pintas that are not on the island of Pinta and various other ones. How did they get from island to island? Because as some of us know, there are different species on different islands. So how come a different species is on a different island?
Yeah, generally, when you look at Galapagos, particularly for species that had to come by sea, birds are a different thing because they can fly out or be swept out by winds. But in general, the geneticists have shown us that most of the animals, like the reptiles, arrived first on the most southeastern islands. So they came out on currents from the continent, hit land, went on shore. And then from there, you have to think, how did these animals then disperse to the other islands? And when I first went to Galapagos, I'd read a book that said, you know, tortoises had fallen off cliffs into the ocean and got swept. And it seemed a little bit unreal to me. And then I happened, when I was doing my research on giant tortoises in 82, 83, I lived in Galapagos during the largest El Nino of the past 400 years, and we had up to 12 feet of rain on the coastal areas. I think highlands in some islands probably had close to 30 feet of rain.
Okay, so just to clarify, when you're talking about El Nino, we're talking about lots of rain and flooding.
Yeah.
Okay.
For Galapagos. Now, El Nino does things all over the world differently, but when it hits Galapagos, you get a lot of rain and flooding.
Okay, so we're visualizing a lot of rain and a lot of floods. Okay.
Yeah. So the tortoises also tend to migrate down during El Niños because it's easier to live in the lowlands than it is up in the highlands where the flooding and the vegetation is really, really dense. The vegetation's dense, a lot of flooding. So as they're getting closer to the coast, if you have a major river coming through, it could wash a tortoise into the sea.
So
all of a sudden, the tortoises now, because they don't swim, they float.
That's the question. So they can float. They don't choose to go in the water, but they won't drown if they do get into the water.
Exactly.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
Once they're in the ocean, they are carried by the currents.
So they probably flip and flop around on their little elephant feet, and they move a little bit, right? Like trying to row a big
mostly
sailboat.
Mostly they float. Because their feet are down in the water. They're huge animals, but the majority of the inside of that shell is lung. So there's a lot of air in there.
Okay.
So they float. The currents would move them, and it's been shown, like pinta tortoises are most closely related to pintas at the very north, Espanolas at the very south. They're most closely related to Espanola. But if you look at the ocean currents, it makes sense because there's a current that runs straight north from Espanola and doesn't touch any other island until it gets to Pinta.
Okay.
So you have these animals being dispersed by the ocean.
Okay. So that explains how they got from island to island.
Yeah.
And okay. So that's clear enough. Now, there are some issues with immigration, with populations, with actually people who live there. This is not just a barren natural land. It's a bunch of islands, I presume quite a lot of land mass. And tourism is big because it's a fascinating place and because, of course, it's made famous by Darwin and the Voyage of the Beagle and his other work. What are the issues surrounding conservation, increased population of tortoises, and immigration?
That's a big question. And basically, when I first went there in 1981, there were about 2,000 tourists per year. And now I think the number is closing in on 200,000. So when you have that kind of increase in tourism, you also have to have an increase in all of the support services. So food, hotels, restaurants, boats. And so as tourism increased, the human population living in the islands increased. And so you run into this conflict or potential conflict between human needs and ecosystem, the natural world, and what Ecuador and all of the those of us who work for conservation in Galapagos are trying to find is to find a balance where we can have a sustainable human population that does not impact the natural world to any great extent.
Well, is there an indigenous population?
No, the Galapagos were not even discovered until 1835. No, that's when Darwin was there. They weren't discovered. They were way off the beaten track. They weren't colonized until the 1800s. So unlike the other archipelagos of the world, like Hawaii or in the South Pacific, where you had humans living there for you know, hundreds, if not thousands of years. The Galapagos have only had humans for maybe 150 years, a little bit more than that.
Okay.
So that's why Galapagos is very special, because it still has 95% of its original biodiversity there.
Okay, and
other islands.
We're running a little short, so I would like to just address the issue in the next minute or so about immigration and why you need to deal with immigration if it's just a part of Ecuador, and yet people from Ecuador who come out there to make a living are considered immigrants. How does that work? And just, we have about a minute.
Yeah, it reminds me to some extent of Mexico and the United States. Galapagos has a higher, a better economy than the rest of continental Ecuador, many people from the continent want to come out. Tourism is very great in the economy, so people can come out and work in Galapagos and earn more money, send it home. So what Ecuador has been trying to do, and they started in 1998, to create a special law for Galapagos that will control immigration, and so people can only go out for certain periods of time. Okay. They can only go out if they have a contract for work, and okay. when they're done, they must return to the continent.
So the difference there between the Mexico and United States analogy is that the Galapagos are actually a part of Ecuador, so it still applies somehow.
Yes, it's a part of Ecuador, and it's a province since the 1970s, so it would be the same as the states in the United States, Oregon. I don't know if you remember when Oregon tried to close everyone out, and they couldn't because they were a state.
No.
So what Ecuador did in order to try to protect Galapagos was create, even though it's a province, it's a special regime of Ecuador.
I get it.
So it can have special laws about how many people can move there and how they can move there.
That's interesting. I think we get the idea now, and I'm afraid we've run out of time, Linda. So appreciate very much you coming on. I think we're now more educated about the Galapagos than we were before. And
well, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Okay. I'd like to thank Linda Cayo for joining us this morning. I have always wanted to visit the Galapagos Islands. It is a wondrous place, unlike any place on Earth. It is the natural world in its purest form, except, of course, for the tourists, but it may be the tourist industry which is protecting it. And Linda Cayo is in the forefront of the preservation of this spectacular ocean wilderness. Our thought for the week, it is the veteran who has given us freedom of religion. It is the veteran who has given us freedom of the press. It is the veteran who has given us freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, the right to a fair trial, and it is the veteran who has given us the right to vote. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the world. Next up, Howard Sturman of the Flying Sturmans. I am Bob Lebensold, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.